Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with a Pantograph for Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. We'll begin with the headline on the first page entitled, From Cancellations to Goodbyes, Top 10 Pantograph Sports Stories, Year in Review. The most frequently asked question for sports writers during the past year was, what do you write about with no sports? The answer? Plenty. The COVID-19 global pandemic brought the sports world to a screeching halt in March. While the games have slowly trickled back, there remained plenty of sports stories to cover throughout the year. Here is a list of our top 10 Pantograph stories. Cancellations galore. Beginning with the Missouri Valley Conference Women's Basketball Tournament in mid-March, events involving area teams and individuals fell by the wayside because of the pandemic. Roanoke Benson won the Class 1A Super Sectional and was at the state finals until it was canceled. Illinois Wesleyan's men's golf team was ranked number one but didn't get to defend its NCAA Division III title. Fall sports were mostly dormant, too, as everyone hoped 2021 would bring back their sports. The ongoing struggle between the Illinois High School Association to resume seasons in a safe manner against Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Illinois Department of Public Health refusing to budge figures to drag into 2021. Only a handful of fall sports were allowed with no state finals. The IHSA wanted to start the basketball season, but the governor, IDPH, said the sport was high risk and most schools deferred. States around Illinois are playing, which further incites coaches and athletes and parents. Number three, Larry Lyons retires as ISU's AD. Illinois State ended the year searching for a new athletic director, as Larry Lyons announced in November he was retiring at the end of 2020. Lyons led the athletic department since 2013 and worked there for 33 years. ISU won 24 conference championships and went to 15 NCAA tournaments and posted record grade point averages under his watch. The highlight of Lyons' tenure was the football team finishing second in the 2014 Football Championship Series National Championship game. Number four, when Illinois State Athletic Director Larry Lyons told student athletes in a Zoom meeting in August that, quote, all Redbird lives matter, unquote, several ISU coaches and student athletes were offended. They thought the remark was insensitive to the Black Lives Matter movement that was sweeping the country after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Lyons apologized, but there was a student-athlete boycott of team activities followed by a protest on campus. Number five, a generation has grown up without knowing what the boys' state basketball tournament is like being played in Champaign. That will soon change. The IHSA announced in June the boys' state tournament would be moving from its home since 1996, Carver Arena in Peoria, to the State Farm Center in Champaign. Champaign had been the home for the state tournaments for 77 years until it moved to Peoria. Number six, Keith Fisher III opts out for ISU basketball. Keith Fisher III was the only senior on Illinois State's men's basketball team and the recognized leader. The 6'8" forward was an All-Missouri Valley Conference preseason third team selection. He was expected to be instrumental in ISU recovering from last season's 10-21 slide. However, concerns related to COVID-19 for his family, which includes a daughter who was born in March, prompted Fisher to opt out of playing this season about a month before the first game. Number seven, Prairie Central senior Logan Decidus couldn't be beaten on the wrestling mat and stretched his winning streak to 112. Decus captured the Class 1A title at 170 pounds in the individual state tournament by beating number one ranked Andrew Wenzel of Dakota 3-2. It was Decus's second straight state crown, and he later won two matches in the dual state tournament to finish the season 59-0. Number 8, Heartland Women Runners second in nation. Heartland Community College began its cross-country program in the fall and made an immediate impact on the national scene. The Hawks women placed second in the NJCAA Division II National Championships led by Olivia Bloyd, a Normal West graduate who took 12th place individually. The Heartland men made an impact too, placing 5th in the nation as Logan Johnson took 10th place. Number 9, ISU's Perkins, IWU's Ruth Rich shine on course. The college golf season was abbreviated for Illinois State's David Perkins and Illinois Wesleyan's Rob Ruthrich, but they made their mark nonetheless. Perkins decided to stay at ISU after the NCAA gave spring sport athletes another year of eligibility because of the pandemic. He worked his way to number 34 in the World Amateur Golf Ranking while being invited to Team USA Walker Cup practices at the end of December. Ruth Rich, a Normal Community graduate, claimed the Jack Nicklaus Division III Player of the Year award. And number 10, Randy Kindred retires as sports editor. The hub of the Pantograph Sports Department decided to relax and enjoy life a little more right before the pandemic struck. Randy Kindred, sports editor since 2012 and an award-winning writer and columnist who was a staff member for 41 years, announced his retirement in March. Luckily for the readers, Kindred still contributes 2 columns per week and remains a fixture for the newspaper. Also on the front page, we have Civil Unrest Sparks Calls About Change. This is by Cade Heather. Calls for racial justice took center stage across the country and in Bloomington Normal in 2020. America can no longer afford to ignore the reality of its historic and current pattern of racism and discrimination, Linda Foster, president of the local branch of the NAACP, said in August, following the shooting of Jacob Blake by law enforcement in Wisconsin. The country must face this issue head on and no longer can afford to deny the oppression suffered by African Americans and other minority group members. The wounding of Blake, who is Black, followed the deaths of Breonna Taylor, a Black 26-year-old emergency medical worker from Kentucky, fatally shot by police in March, and George Floyd in Minneapolis 2 months later. Floyd, a Black man in handcuffs, died after Officer Derek Chauvin, who is white, pushed his knee against Floyd's neck for several minutes. In the year which the COVID-19 pandemic had already shined a light on systemic racism in the U.S., as the virus has disproportionately affected Black communities, Floyd's death at the hands of police heightened all that awareness to a point not seen in decades. Locally, the Floyd killing sparked several days of protest and vandalism in May and June. Looting was reported in at least 10 locations, from big box retailers to the Beyond Hello cannabis dispensary in Normal. 16 people faced charges for looting at Eastman Mall as well. Other stores preemptively boarded their windows. More than 40 people faced charges ranging from looting to mob action to burglary. The cost to Bloomington Normal and Illinois State Police Departments and the McLean County Sheriff's Office totaled nearly $205,000 in police overtime and vehicle damages from items like frozen water bottles, rocks, and bricks. But there were also numerous peaceful demonstrations over the summer. Black Lives Matter Blono had several public meetings about how to bring change to the future. Crowds also gathered in Bloomington in August for the Back the Blue rally, showing support for law enforcement. The series of events brought new attention to police tactics and how municipal resources are spent. Activists have sought fewer dollars in police budgets and reallocating them for other purposes like social services and investments into Black communities and businesses. The effort has pushed for more of a proactive and preventative policing system rather than a reactive one. Once we have a chance to have these discussions and open people's eyes to what is possible, our end goal is to create a systemic change in the way our community views policing and in the way that policing is carried out, said Kai Ajayi, founding member of the local Black Lives Matter chapter. In local news, we have two more McLean County COVID-related deaths by Kevin Barlow. Two more people died with COVID-19 since Thursday, the McLean County Health Department reported on Monday. The deaths included a man and a woman, both in their 80s, who were associated with long-term care facilities. There have been 88 COVID-related deaths in McLean County since March. Health Administrator Jessica McKnight reported 404 new confirmed and probable cases for McLean County on Monday. Those numbers reflected data from the weekend, as well as Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. There have been 11,271 total cases in McLean County since March. The rolling 7-day positivity rate through Sunday was 7.2%, McKnight said. A week ago, it was 8.4%. As of Monday, 1,018 McLean County residents are isolating at home. McKnight also said 10,136 residents have been released from isolation and are considered recovered. 29 residents were reported to be hospitalized with COVID-19 as of Monday. The local hospitals report a total of 78 Central Illinois residents in the hospital with the coronavirus. The hospitals also report 89% of the total beds are in use and 96% of the ICU beds are in use. On Sunday, 329 people tested at the community-based testing center on the McLean County Fairgrounds in West Bloomington. The center will close at 1 p.m. Thursday and will be closed Friday, New Year's Day. The Logan County Department of Public Health announced two more deaths on Monday. An individual over 100 and an individual in their 80s were reported. There have been 34 fatalities related to COVID-19 in Logan County through Monday. During the last week, 139 residents have tested positive in Logan County, bringing that county's total to 2,569. In Ford County, a woman in her 90s was the 34th death reported in the county with COVID-19. The woman was associated with an outbreak at Heritage Health in Gibson City. The Ford County Public Health Department also announced 23 new cases since Friday, bringing the total to 1,200. In LaSalle County, two more deaths, a man in his 60s and a woman in her 70s, were confirmed Monday, bringing the total to 223 COVID-related deaths. Also, 27 new cases were reported, including a boy and girl under the ages of 13, three teenage girls, three men in their 20s, four women in their 30s, and four women in their 40s. The Illinois Department of Public Health announced 4,453 new confirmed and probable cases on Monday and an additional 105 deaths. Two men in their 80s and a man in his 90s from Sangamon County, a woman in her 80s and two men in their 90s from Tazewell County, and two women in their 80s from Woodford County were among those listed in Monday's report. IDPH is reporting a total of 942,362 cases, including 16,074 deaths as of Monday. As of Sunday night, 4,243 Illinois residents were reported to be in the hospital with COVID-19. Of those, 884 patients were in the ICU and 515 patients with COVID-19 were on ventilators. The preliminary 7-day statewide test positivity from December 21st through Sunday is 8.7%. Next, we have police open investigation into Blue Ridge teacher by Kevin Barlow. The Farmer City Police Department has opened an investigation involving a teacher at the Blue Ridge School District. The Farmer City Police Department was made aware of a social media post that has been posted on several Farmer City's social media pages, said Police Chief Nathan Guest. The posts were to inform the public of a situation that allegedly involves the Blue Ridge School. The department has opened an investigation and is urging anybody with information to contact the Farmer City Police Department at 1-309-928-2111. Over the weekend, at least two students posted screenshots of text conversations that were said to have originated from the teacher. The students accused the teacher of grooming. No charges have been filed against the teacher as of Monday morning. District officials have not commented on the matter. I am unable to discuss the details of this personnel matter, said Superintendent Hillary Stanifer. She did post a message on the district's Facebook page Monday evening. Dear BR community, social media recently brought attention to a matter that involves a district employee, she wrote. The welfare of our student body is of utmost importance. We will continue to follow proper protocols throughout the situation at hand. While I am unable to share the details of personnel matters, I respect that you are left with many unanswered questions. We will keep you informed within the bounds of policy. Kelsey Watznauer writes, motorist charged with two felonies. Stein accused of DUI, leaving scene of accident, one injured. A Bloomington man is in custody after he hit a pedestrian, causing severe injuries on Saturday night, police said. Randy M. Stein, 69, is charged with two Class 4 felonies, aggravated driving under the influence involving great bodily harm, and leaving the scene of an accident involving personal injury. According to court documents and the probable cause statement read in court on Monday, Stein struck a man walking on Six Points Road east of Oakland Avenue in Bloomington and continued driving with a broken headlight, windshield, and side mirror. After the crash, Stein told his friend he might have hit someone on the way home, according to the statement. His friend went out to check the area and called police to report the crash at about 6:20 p.m. when she found a man laying face down in a nearby ditch, unresponsive and having trouble breathing, the statement said. Police reported he had blood coming from the back of his head and a large contusion. He was taken to a local hospital to be treated for his injuries. Stein later returned to the scene, driving the same vehicle, and told police he had two drinks before he started driving and one since then, and he knew he had hit something but didn't know what it was, authorities said. The victim was on the phone with his girlfriend when he was struck. She told police Sunday that he had bleeding and fluid buildup in his brain and remained unresponsive. He suffered three broken bones in his neck, several cracked ribs and abrasions on his torso and legs. In addition to the felonies, Stein was given traffic citations and charges for driving under the influence, failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident, leaving the scene of an accident involving death or injury, operating an uninsured vehicle, and expired registration. Stein was jailed in lieu of posting $5,035 bond, and an arraignment was scheduled for January 15th. Next, we have Wintry Mix Expected for Central Illinois This Week by Valerie Wells. Central Illinois can expect a mix of rain and snow over the next 2 days, though little accumulation is expected. The National Weather Service in Lincoln says Tuesday's forecast for Bloomington Normal is a chance of snow with rain mixed in, with gusts of up to 28 miles per hour on Wednesday and a chance for freezing rain on Thursday evening. A significant storm system will move from California across the country on Tuesday, bringing heavy snow and hazardous travel conditions to the Central Plains, though it is expected to focus more on the northern part of Illinois and miss Central Illinois. Heavier amounts are expected in the Chicago area, where the two storms are expected to bring several inches of snow and freezing rain. Turning to national news, on the front page we have House approves $2,000 checks. Republican-led Senate will now consider the bill. This is by Lisa Mascaro and Jill Colvin with the Associated Press. The House voted overwhelmingly Monday to increase COVID-19 relief checks to $2,000, meeting President Donald Trump's demand for bigger payments and sending the bill to the GOP-controlled Senate, where the outcome is highly uncertain. Democrats led passage 275-134, their majority favoring additional assistance, but dozens of Republicans suddenly joined in approval. While Democrats favored bigger checks, Congress had settled on smaller $600 payments in a compromise over the big year-end relief bill Trump reluctantly signed into law. The president's GOP allies oppose more spending, and Trump's push puts them in a difficult spot. The vote was a stunning turn of events from just days ago when House Republicans blocked Trump's demands during a Christmas Eve session. After Trump spent days fuming from his private club in Florida, where he is spending the holidays, dozens of Republicans preferred to link with Democrats rather than buck the outgoing president. Senators were set to return to session Tuesday, forced to consider the measure amid similar stark GOP divisions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi declared, "Republicans have a choice. Vote for this legislation or vote to deny the American people the bigger paychecks they need." The showdown could end up as more symbol than substance. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, has declined to say publicly how the Senate will handle the bill when Democrats there try to push it forward for a vote on Tuesday. After the robust House vote, Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer warned there is no good reason for Senate Republicans to stand in the way. There's strong support for these $2,000 emergency checks from every corner of the country, Schumer said in a statement. Leader McConnell ought to make sure Senate Republicans do not stand in the way of helping to meet the needs of American workers and families who are crying out for help. The legislative action during the rare holiday week session may do little to change the $2 trillion plus COVID-19 relief and federal spending package that Trump signed into law on Sunday, one of the biggest bills of its kind, providing relief for millions of Americans. In state news, we have lawyer, Rockford shooter may have PTSD. Attorney, Webb had 4 deployments to Afghanistan. This is by Michael Charm and Sophia Tureen with the Associated Press. An attorney for a U.S. Army Special Forces sergeant arrested in what authorities called an apparently random shooting at an Illinois bowling alley that left 3 people dead told an initial hearing on Monday that her client may suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Duke Webb, 37, faces 3 counts of murder and 3 counts of first-degree attempted murder for injuring 3 others in the shooting at the Don Carter Lanes in Rockford on Saturday evening. According to Army Service information, Webb had 4 deployments to Afghanistan, the most recent one ending in July. His lawyer, Elizabeth Bucko, also told the hearing in a Winnebago County courtroom that Webb appeared to have issues with memory loss. She added that he will undergo mental health evaluations, the Rockford Register-Star reported. The judge denied bond for Webb, meaning he will remain jail. His arraignment was set for February 16th. Webb was taken into custody shortly after the shooting and without officers firing a shot, Rockford Police Chief Dan O'Shea said on Sunday. The suspect has no known ties to the victims and authorities believe this was a completely random act, O'Shea said. At a news conference on Monday afternoon, Winnebago County State's Attorney Jay Hanley said that Webb was in the Rockford area visiting family, but Hanley declined to comment on possible motives for the shooting. Bucko, the defense attorney, told the Associated Press later Monday that Webb had no prior criminal record in Illinois or anywhere else, something she said was confirmed by a pretrial service report to the court. She added that Webb has been successful in the service for 12 years. Webb joined the Army in 2008 and was on leave Saturday, the Army has said. A criminal complaint released Monday says Webb admitted to the shooting shortly after the officers arrived on the scene, even showing officers where he had placed the two guns he had brought with him, a Glock 40 caliber and a Glock 389 caliber. Hanley said Monday that the firearms did not appear to be military issue. The complaint describes horrific scenes as the gunman opened fire just before 7 p.m. Saturday, first targeting a group of teenagers on the first floor of the two-story building. A bullet ripped through the shoulder of a 14-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy was hit in the face. Both survived. Thomas Furseth was on the first floor and began running toward the stairs to the second floor bar when the gunman fatally shot him in the torso, according to the complaint. He managed to get to the second floor before collapsing. The gunman then went up the stairs himself and opened fire in a bar area filled with up to 25 people. Dennis Steinhoff, 73, was fatally shot in the torso. Jerome Woodfork, 69, also was fatally shot, and a witness later described seeing Woodfork falling from a second-floor balcony. His body was found below the balcony in a parking lot. Tyrone Lewis, 62, survived, but he is listed in critical condition. He was shot while in the bar area in the thigh, back, neck, groin, and buttocks. According to the Army, Webb's first deployment to Afghanistan was from August to December 2009. His other deployments were from October 2013 to April 2014, from October 2014 to April 2015, and from January to July of this year. Webb was twice awarded the Bronze Star. Among the other awards he has compiled was the Army Good Conduct Medal, the Global War on Terrorism Medal, and the Combat Action Badge, according to the service information. The Army has said Webb is a Special Forces Assistance Operations and Intelligence Sergeant assigned to Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. O'Shea did not explain why he was in Illinois. The 14-year-old boy shot in the face was airlifted to a hospital in Madison, Wisconsin, in stable condition, and a 16-year-old girl who was shot in the shoulder was treated at a hospital and released. Major General John Brennan, commander of the 1st Special Forces Command Airborne, said in a statement Sunday night that Webb's alleged actions were shocking and completely out of character with Webb's 12 years of honorable service. Rockford is a city of about 170,000 residents, about 80 miles northwest of Chicago. The bowling alley was closed when the shooting happened in accordance with restrictions imposed to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, O'Shea said. But a bar upstairs was open. The chief said the upstairs venue has double doors that open to the outsides, ensuring the bar is in compliance with Illinois COVID-19 mitigation guidance. Most of the people at the Don Carter Lanes escaped or hid, O'Shea said. The teens who were wounded were picking up food at the carryout section of the bowling alley. In the digest, we have a white Columbus, Ohio police officer was fired Monday after body cam footage showed him shooting and killing 47-year-old Andre Hill, a black man, who was holding a cell phone and refusing to administer first aid for several minutes. Columbus police officer Adam Coy was fired hours after a hearing was held to determine his employment, Columbus Public Safety Director Ned Pettis Jr. said in a statement. Coy remains under criminal investigation for last week's shooting. The decision came after Pettis concluded a hearing to determine whether Coy's actions in the moments before and after Hill's shooting on Tuesday were justified. The public safety director upheld the recommendation of Police Chief Thomas Quinlan, who made a video statement Christmas Eve saying he saw enough to recommend that Coy be terminated. This concludes the first part of the Pantograph reading for Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part two.